number one talk show choice of many galaxies.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time. Welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. And I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a good habit to get into. Boy, I'll tell you what is the deal? What is up with all these celebrities dying all of a sudden? There's Ed McMahon, there's Farrah Fawcett, there's Michael Jackson, and then today comes the news that John Keel, the very famous author of the Mothman Prophecies, has died. I know, look, he was 79, and that's not ancient, but it's pretty old. But it just seems like, you know, there's just so much happening all of a sudden. So many of the famous folks passing away all of a sudden. John Keel died of congestive heart failure, and he was very well known, of course, for the Mothman Prophecies. But he wrote a lot of stuff having to do with UFOs and with the paranormal. He was probably known to some of you for his book, UFOs, Operation Trojan Horse. And so if you knew him from Mothman Prophecies, maybe you also read this book. But he has passed away, and our condolences and sympathies to the family for sure. Speaking of UFOs, July the 4th was a pretty active day for UFOs in the USA. And that sounds like a good title for a song, doesn't it? UFOs in the USA. Maybe we could get Paul McCartney to write that. But 10 states had UFO sightings on July the 4th. Now, these were not flares, these were not rockets, these were not fireworks. These were bona fide UFOs, some of them spherical shaped. And over 10 states now, 10 states. That's a bunch, isn't it? Well, here on The Kevin Smith Show, we talk about all manner of things strange and unexplained. My guest tonight will be Tim Schwartz. Tim Schwartz has been with us before. He is renowned as a UFO journalist and author. And he is into all manner of things strange and unexplained as well. And we're going to be talking with him tonight about something that is pretty weird. We've heard about it on this show before. We've talked about it on this show, but not with Tim Schwartz. It's something that is, some people say it exists, some people say it doesn't exist, and I really haven't made up my mind what I think about it, but other than this, it's weird. It is really, really weird. And if you're going to be talking about weird things, this is one of the best guys to talk to because he investigates them and he writes about them. We'll be talking with Tim Schwartz on the other side of this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Tim Schwartz, as I said, is a renowned UFO journalist and author, and he's back with us again tonight. He's been with us before, and he's back with us again tonight. Tim, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Why, thank you, Kevin. It's, as always, a pleasure to be with you. Quickly, Kevin, I would just like to acknowledge the passing of John Keel. I know for myself, John Keel was really just such an influence on myself. I ran across his books very early on, and I tell you something, the way that this gentleman handled his research and his investigations was such an influence on me. That I tell you something, the world is a better place for all of us trying to understand the world of the weird from such people such as John Keel. I mean, it's a sad day that he's passed away, and he'll really be missed.
Yeah, he. The report that I read said that he checked himself into the hospital and had suffered a heart attack. And then he passed away as a result of congestive heart failure. So that is sad. But, you know, we've been hit by kind of a tidal wave of deaths of celebrities here in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, it's just, I think a reminder, it ought to be, and by the way, folks, this is not intended to sound preachy. That's not my intention at all here. Nevertheless, when these celebrities pass away, it ought to grab our attention and remind us of a couple of things. And one is, it's the only guarantee you were born with. The only guarantee you came here with is that you're going to leave. And, you know, between the day you got here and the day you leave, you make an impact on the universe. And you get to choose what kind of impact that's going to be. And these folks that we've mentioned here tonight, and John Keel, especially in terms of this show and its genre, certainly made a big, big impact. And a very positive one. Tim, the last time you were here, we talked about UFOs a lot. And we talked about Nikola Tesla a lot, but not quite as much as we talked about UFOs.
Right.
Tonight, I'd like to explore a little bit more about Tesla and a link between him and this very, very weird phenomena that people are talking about that is usually referred to as time slips or time jumps. And in fact, you know, there has to be a link between Tesla and this phenomena. If for no other reason than at least the rumors that he was involved in this rumored Philadelphia experiment in which there was a displacement of time and space. So why don't we start with just describe for us this phenomena that's called time slips. What are we talking about there?
Well, time slip, Kevin, is a an experience. It usually happens only to one person at a time. It seems to be almost a personal type of experience, though I have uncovered a few cases where several people have been involved at the same time. But a time slip is a situation where somebody will be, say, for instance, just walking down the street, you know, minding their own business, and they will suddenly find that their environment around them has quickly changed, and they seem to be experiencing a different reality. Usually it seems to be a past reality, like they have found themselves suddenly thrust into a different time. The sidewalk under their feet will suddenly change from concrete to, say, brick. The buildings around them will change from modern buildings to a more old-fashioned buildings. They'll even some people have even reported that they could smell the air, and it smells a lot cleaner and fresher than what they're used to. They'll hear the sounds from that time period. They'll see the sights, though it seems that their interaction with that time period is minimal at best. In fact, it almost seems like that they are observing this period rather than interacting with it. Though there have been some experiences where people have reported that that they themselves have been seen by people supposedly from that time period. Generally, it only lasts a few minutes, and then almost as quickly, they'll find themselves back into their present reality, seemingly with no dire consequences. Now, of course, we get these stories from the people who have come back. Every year, thousands of people all across the planet seem to unexplainably disappear, so perhaps some of these people have had a time slip, but couldn't find their way back. But that, in a nutshell, is what a time slip is.
I had a guest on, would have been about 3 years ago now, who was talking about a trip that he and his wife took in their automobile. And as they drove through this particular valley, it's just one highway, a two-lane highway that goes down through this valley. And there was a tanker truck in front of them. And he said, you know, it was weird. We passed that same tanker truck four times, and it never passed us. And I said, well, couldn't it have been maybe there were four tanker trucks from the same company that were maybe in a caravan and headed out across that valley? He said they all had the same tag number, the same trailer numbers, the same truck number. Everything was identical. And he said, we passed that thing four times, and it never passed us. Hmm. Would that be a time slip?
Very much so. That is a situation where the people almost seem to be think of like a record where the needle keeps skipping over the same spot over and over again. Mm-hmm. There have been a number of people who have had very similar experiences. If they had paid attention to their clocks or their wristwatches, they may have found that hardly any time had passed at all. You know, it may have seemed to them that a couple of hours had passed, or 20 minutes or so, mm-hmm. but in all actuality, maybe less than a minute. We've all heard those who pay attention to UFO abduction experiences of people who experience missing time, you know, where they'll suddenly become aware that they've missed a couple of hours. Well, there are people who have had time slip experiences where instead of experiencing missing time, they'll actually find themselves gaining time, where when they arrive home from a situation, they'll find that they've arrived a lot earlier than they thought they did, almost as if they had been shoved backwards into time.
Just maybe 3 weeks ago, I had Daryl Sims on the show.
Yes.
And Daryl Sims told the story about a lady, I believe it was Brazil. It was in Brazil. And she was headed home from work. And for her to get home, she has to take a tollway. There are three toll booths that she has to stop and pay. It's quite a journey. It takes her 3 hours to get where she was going. And she saw this light in the sky, this UFO. She stopped at each toll booth, and she was home in an hour and 20 minutes. But it takes 3 hours to get there. Mm-hmm. And so there's a case where she gained time.
Yes. Yeah, that's... And a lot of times when people have these experiences of gaining time, as you say, there seems to be a UFO phenomena associated with it. Now, when it comes to time slips, this seems to be more... At least as far as I can tell with my investigations, this seems to be more of a natural phenomena. And even though they may feel like that they have experienced a past situation for quite a while, when they do finally come out of it, they'll find that really only a short period of time has passed in their present reality. And in fact, some people have actually reported they have been with companions, and the companions report absolutely no strange experience at all. So it almost seems like that to the person who is experiencing the time slip, that no time at all has passed in their reality, though they seem to experience a reality that takes on a completely different time length, for want of a better word.
It's sort of like, sort of like deja vu on steroids.
That's a very good way to put it.
Well, I think all of us have had that deja vu experience where I have many times in my life watched life unfold in front of my eyes, knowing exactly what's coming next, because somewhere, somehow, some way, I had lived that. I had already seen it. I knew exactly what was coming, and I don't know why.
Well, it really opens up all kinds of scientific and philosophical discussions on the true nature of time. I think that time slips show us that time is really a lot different than we think it is, and possibly even what scientists currently are saying that it is. What that actual nature of reality could be, it's really hard to say. I mean, I'm not a scientist, and I know that there are a lot of scientists out there who, would just quake in their shoes listening to this type of discussion, taking into consideration that time may be something other than the linear going from the past, present, and future, whether it be something completely different than that. But I think that time slips and other kinds of unusual, what we would call paranormal phenomena, does seem to show that time is different and possibly even non-existent in the way that we would describe it as existing.
Yeah, but I view time this way. And first let me describe time as I think scientists view it, many scientists. The way many scientists view time, it's like a train on a track.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a train on a track that's headed from west to east can go from west to east. But they're, that doesn't mean those are the only directions that are available for travel. It's just the only ones that train can travel because it can only operate on that track. But there is north, there is south, there is northeast, north-northeast, northwest, north-northwest, and so forth, all the way around the compass. The limitation of travel is a limitation of the train. But that doesn't mean the other directions don't exist. So we're sort of like that train on the track, we humans.
Right.
Well, we travel from birth to death. We travel, at least by the way we measure it, we travel 1 second at a time forward in time. And we can't imagine going any other direction. So we're like that train on the track. But I can't imagine that that's the only direction there is. I think time is like a sphere. There are possibilities in every possible direction in time. Not only backward, but sideways, upward, downward, circular. It's like being inside of a ball. Now, that's the way I view it, and I may be wrong, but I think that if there are people that figure that out and figure out that, you know, you can go from New York to Chicago on a train, but this guy invented something called a car, an automobile. You could do it in an automobile, and then somebody invented this thing called an airplane. You could do it in an airplane. And if you went in an automobile, think of all the many different directions you could go to get to Chicago.
Yep. I think that explanation is just as good and possibly just as valid as any of the other ones that are out there. And
well, of course it is. It's my show.
Yeah. What you say goes.
No, but you see what I'm saying. Sure. There was a time in our history when if you were going from New York to Chicago, you went by train. Mm-hmm. And that meant you went one specific route. And that is where the train tracks were. But once the automobiles came along, you could go a lot of different routes to get to Chicago. And then once the airplanes came along, let me tell you, I went home to Thailand three years ago. I went home to Thailand. The only way, because I waited too late to book my flight, you know, it was almost last minute. So all the flights leaving here that connected with flights going to Thailand were booked. The only way I could catch a flight that would link me to a flight to Thailand was to fly from Phoenix to Chicago and then catch a flight in Chicago 8 hours later and fly back to Los Angeles. It's the only way I could get to Los Angeles. All the flights were from here to Los Angeles were booked. The only way I could do it was to go to Chicago, wait eight hours, and go back to Los Angeles, catch a flight going to Japan, and then catch a flight going home to Thailand. Mm-hmm. Now, that certainly is not the most direct route, but I did get to Thailand. And I think the same sort of principle applies with time. Just because we're on a track that runs one direction, that doesn't mean that's the only possibility in time. It just means our technology in time is still locomotive.
Well, I think it also has a lot to do with the physical nature of our reality. You know, I mean, we evolved as physical beings, and we have to live in the material world.
Yeah, and the physical reality right now is that a break just took over. So we have to step out of here for a break for just a couple of minutes. We'll be back, though, right after this. We'll pick up right there when we come back, Tim. right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on earth. And my guest is Tim Schwartz. Tim, when we stepped away for break, you were talking about we have to live, you know, we've evolved in this physical reality, and we have to live in this physical reality. And then you got cut off, so I want you to have the opportunity to finish your thought.
Well, sure. Well, my point being is that, you know, we have to live in this physical reality. I mean, we have, you know, we evolved to live and to produce the next generation, and because of that, our mind, basically our brain, acts like a filter system, and it perceives our reality in a very limited fashion. And part of that fashion is that we conceive time as based on the cyclical activities that go around us every day. You know, the sun rises and the sun sets. That's really the most basic one. If we could perceive what is actually going on around us, the true nature of reality, we would all probably be gibbering madmen. And there have been people throughout history who have managed to knock down those brick walls that surround us and get a glimpse of the true nature of our reality. Some people, they manage to do this through highly advanced spirituality techniques, you know, yoga masters, that sort of thing. Other people are just possibly just a little bit unhinged enough that they catch a glimpse of this reality. But what I'm saying is that our perception of time, I think, really plays such a factor into how we live our lives and how we experience time that it's really, because we have no other concepts, that it's really almost impossible to try to imagine time and multiple dimensions and things like that in any other fashion. Every once in a while, Mother Nature throws us a curveball, and we have strange experiences like time slips. And whether or not we are the people who experience these time slips are actually getting a glimpse of something that happened in the past, or in some rare instances, there have been people who appear to have caught a glimpse of things in the future. Whether or not they're actually experiencing that, or experiencing, say, maybe a parallel dimension or reality that exists alongside of us, that every once in a while, you know, the gateways break down and you can see into that, it's really hard to say. I am convinced, though, that this is a real phenomena, and I think that even though the cases that these people report naturally are anecdotal, and to most scientists have no meaning because they can't be tested in a laboratory, at least not yet. But I think that the experience of these people is extremely valid, and that we should pay, you know, really close attention to them, because we can see some very remarkable similarities that I think will eventually lead us to a whole new understanding on the nature of our reality.
Well, a lot of people disagree with me when I say what I'm about to say, but I still think it is correct, and that is that what we call paranormal today, anything that we call paranormal is called paranormal simply because we don't have a scientific explanation for it.
Mm-hmm.
But by that definition, almost everything in the universe is paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most bizarre and mysterious things in all the world, and it is physical, is quantum physics. It's just bizarre, and it's mysterious, and it has so many unanswered questions and yet observable phenomena within quantum physics, and we depend upon it, we use it, and yet don't understand it very well. Quantum physics, a great deal of it, would almost fall into the realm of the paranormal, even though it's scientific, simply because there's so much of it that's just spooky and we don't understand it. Now, let's talk a little bit about not just time slips, but the possibility of time travel and Tesla. Now, the connection between Tesla and time travel, at least the one that most of us would be familiar with, is the story of the Philadelphia experiment. And some people say it never happened. It's pure fiction. Other people say it did happen and it's been covered up. And both sides present convincing evidence for their story. First, let's start with what you think about the Philadelphia experiment in terms of, was it real? Did it happen?
You know, Kevin, that's one of those stories that, you know, if you ask me on a Monday, I would say that, yeah, it's real. You ask me the next day, and then I'm going to say, well, I don't think so. You know, it's... I tend to waffle back and forth because there has been so much disinformation about this story throughout the years. It's at this point, it's almost like the UFO crash at Roswell. At this point, there has been so much said about it, so much false information, so much disinformation, that I don't know if we're ever going to truly know what happened. But, now, saying that, I will say that I do think that something did happen, that there was actually a series of experiments, probably starting out as just very simple, mundane degaussing techniques. For those out there who aren't familiar with, during World War II, metal ships, and they may still have to do this today, I have no idea, but would develop a magnetic field that made them especially vulnerable to mines that were laid in the water that would be attracted to their hulls. Periodically, these ships would have to be degaussed, and their magnetic fields taken away. And according to some people, a new technique at degaussing these ships showed some interesting phenomena that may be connected in several different ways to some early experiments done by the great scientist Nikola Tesla. And an attempt was made to see whether or not using rotating magnetic field, electromagnetic fields, to see if you could make a ship invisible to radar. Almost like an early attempt at stealth. And when these experiments were conducted, not only was the ship that the experiment was being conducted on made radar invisible, but it appeared to disappear physically, where it was no longer seen in the Philadelphia shipyard. And then according to some people, not only did it become invisible, but it actually left this time-space continuum and made a skip from one location to another instantaneously. And then according to some people, like Al Bielek, it made a skip through time and space and reappeared in the future, and in fact, in several different time periods. It's really hard to say, which of these...
Let me tell you what I think are the two most weighty bits of evidence.
Okay.
The first one was the intense interest that the government took in this book called The Philadelphia Experiment. They became intensely interested in it. They investigated it. If they heard a story about a talking barnacle, I don't think they'd be interested in it because they know it's fiction. If they heard a story, about an undersea city that is alive and well, and there's a big bubble of air and people live in it, they would do what you're doing. They would laugh. The fact that they took so much interest in it and actually obtained a copy and investigated it tells me there's something to it.
Yes.
Now, another thing is that the logbook for the ship that is supposed to have been involved has pages missing, a page missing, for the day of the alleged experiment. Now, those two things tell me that there's something more to this. Maybe it's not exactly like what was in the book, but there's something more to this than just a wild story. They tried to tell us that Bob Lazar's stories were wild and that he was a fake and a fraud, and yet the evidence shows that he was who he said he was, and he worked where he said he worked. And that's been examined pretty intensely by George Knapp, and George Knapp uncovered several bits of evidence that corroborated his story. You don't focus a lot of attention on something that is patently false. If it's false, you just say, that's nutty, and you walk away. Mm-hmm. But they invested time, they invested money, they invested investigators, and there's a page missing from the logbook. So I'm not sure what happened, but I'm pretty sure, like you, something happened.
Well, one of the interesting things about the Philadelphia experiment is that there's been allegations that that Nikola Tesla was involved in it. And curiously, Tesla, in 1895, while doing experiments in his laboratory in Manhattan, had a rather death-defying incident where he was working with his high-voltage Tesla coil, and in fact he was experimenting with rotating magnetic fields in his laboratory. And he had an arc of electricity strike him, and he told a reporter afterwards that...
You know what? We'll be on the edge of our seats waiting to hear what he told that reporter because a break just took over. Folks, we'll be back right after this. When we went away for break, Tim, you were about to tell us what happened to Tesla.
So like I said, in 1895, Tesla in his laboratory in Manhattan was experimenting with his Tesla coil, and he was struck by an arc of electricity that delivered, he said, 3.5 million volts to him. He told the reporter that he was struck in his right shoulder. And Tesla said that on contact with the resonating electromagnetic charge, that he found himself outside of his time frame reference. Now, this was something that Tesla said years before modern scientists and physicists started using this type of language. But he said that he could see the immediate past, present, and future all at once, but that he was paralyzed within the electromagnetic field and able to help himself. Now, fortunately, there was an assistant in the laboratory that turned off the current before any permanent damage was done. But now, this sounds strangely very like what was reported by some eyewitnesses with the USS Eldridge during the Philadelphia experiments. Unfortunately, if we take these stories to be fact, there were a number of sailors who were on board this ship that were left within this magnetic field too long, and they found themselves actually melded within the hull of the ship. Some of them still alive, others burst into flames as soon as the ship came back to this reality, others vanished completely. So I think that Tesla's story, as reported by the New York Herald, by the way, shows that there at least is some connection with Nikola Tesla and the Philadelphia experiments. Whether or not Tesla was an active participant, I don't think so. There are some researchers who say that Tesla was involved intimately for quite a while, but you have to realize that the Philadelphia experiments took place in the early 1940s, and by this point, Tesla was extremely ill, and he had a heart condition. He had had an accident in New York where he had been struck by a cab that left him partially crippled. So I don't think that Tesla was actually in Philadelphia working on this. Possibly a lot of his research material had been taken and used, possibly with his permission. Maybe not. But I do think that a lot of Tesla's research, earlier research, was used in this strange experiment.
Well, this book, The Philadelphia Experiment, was, I think, the author of that book, the pen name was Carl Allen, right?
Yes, yeah.
When was that published?
Well, it actually, the book itself, see now, Carl Allende, I think, is his real name. I'm trying to remember now if that was his real name or if Carl Allen was his real name. But he had sent a number of letters to the researcher Morris Jessup, who had written a book. I think it was called the Case for the Flying Saucers. And now this was back in the early 1960s, and this was when the first allegations that a mysterious experiment had taken place. Later, Jessup received a copy of his book where a number of people appeared to have written in the margins commenting on some of the things that that Jessup had written. And the military took such an interest in this that they actually had a small publisher republish this so that it could be distributed among, I think it was the Office of the Navy, so that other people within this branch could view this, which, as you said earlier, seems to indicate that there was enough interest going on that, you know, it seems to be very suspicious that the amount of interest that was taken in this in, at such an early period of time within the military, that it's obvious that, that something was going on and that there was fear that there was some kind of leak. Now, I will tell you, from my own experience, I worked at a television station in Dayton, Ohio, in the early 1980s, and one of my beats was with Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And one time, the press liaison just casually mentioned to me that the Air Force was interested in some of the field, as he put it, field research done by that madman, mad scientist, Nikola Tesla. And I was left with the impression that he was talking about field research in the form of the Philadelphia experiment. Now, this was with the Air Force, so I think that that they were attempting to take this research and use it on airplanes, possibly, or, you know, jets, military jets, possibly even missiles and things like that.
One of the things that leads me to believe, and I use the word advisedly, I don't normally say believe, but this is purely speculation on my part, that the Philadelphia experiment in some form or fashion took place, is the fact that my dad, a former U.S. Marine, talked about it prior to that book being published. And he did not claim that he had been a part of it or that he saw it, but had talked to sailors who were there and were on the ship long before the book came out, long before the movie came out. He talked about some of them just fading away and then coming back. And that he had talked with also someone who worked sort of, we would say, in the civilian world. The guy worked as an orderly in a veterans hospital that told him they were treating one of the people that had been on the Eldridge. Although he did not say Eldridge, he said that had been on the ship at the Philadelphia experiment, and that this guy would just fade away, and then he would come back and fade back in, and he would be very ill when this happened. He described the symptoms, and I heard all of this before I even knew there was a book. I heard it before there was a book. I heard it in the early 60s. So the story was out there among service people before the book was published, and my dad had not been in the Marines for a number of years at that point. But he was like all of them, they stay in touch with some, and he heard this story. And consequently, I heard the story. So I think there is probably a great deal more to it than the debunkers would have us believe. But I'm not really sure when, you know, when you start trying to fill in the blank, you say, well, I think there's more to it. And then you try to fill that blank in. That's speculation. I don't know.
Well, there have been sailors who served on the Eldridge who said that they were with that ship at that time and that nothing happened. But what isn't mentioned is that the sailors that were on board the Eldridge during these experiments were not the commissioned sailors for that ship, but were volunteers. I'll put that in quotation marks because they were told to volunteer.
Okay, we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll pick up there and move forward in time. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Tim Schwartz, and as I told you, he is a renowned UFO journalist, paranormal journalist. He writes for, well, he's published in a lot of different places, but principally you can find him at conspiracyjournal.com. If you click on his picture on my website at kevinsmithshow.com, you click on his picture, it will take you to conspiracyjournal.com. In a moment, we're going to open up the telephone lines. They are not open yet, but they will be in just a few minutes. You may want to make a note of the telephone numbers. For those of you watching on KSS TV, it's on your screen. 480-553-7232 is the number to call. If you need to call me toll-free, you can do so at 888-223-4599. If you live in the USA or Canada, please use one of those two numbers. Now, if you live outside of the USA and Canada, you can send me a flash message. It has to be from outside the USA, outside of Canada, and it has to pertain to tonight's show. But you do that by going over to kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and you will see the link that says Flash Message. Tim, you were talking about sailors that have served on the Eldridge. They say nothing happened. They were there. They were assigned to the Eldridge during that period of time. None of that happened. And then you said, but the crew that was on the Eldridge for the Philadelphia experiment were volunteers who were ordered to volunteer, and then we had to take a break. Finish your thought, and then we'll open up the telephone lines.
Well, yeah, that's correct. The actual participants on the Eldridge were taken from a number of different sources and were not the commissioned sailors on that ship. So anybody who says that they were on the Eldridge at the time, well, they may have been commissioned for that ship, but they were not the participants in the actual Philadelphia experiment. After the experiments were completed, those that had survived were a lot of them, as was reported by your father, were sent to rest homes, mental institutions. Those who still had what was left of their minds were put onto other ships, and more than likely were sent to activities that would pretty much guarantee that they'd be killed in action. I don't think that there was probably anybody who participated in the Philadelphia experiment who ended up surviving the war to talk about it. And I should add also that a lot of people who think that they know about the information about the Philadelphia experiment right now, a lot of the wilder tales that are circulating over the internet, some of those involving time travel, extraterrestrial intervention during the experiment, things like that, these stories actually did not come about until after the movies were produced. There was the original Philadelphia Experiment movie, and then at least one, maybe two sequels. One sequel I think was direct to DVD, And I think that a lot of these stories ended up being deliberately circulated in attempt to further muddy the waters about the Philadelphia experiment. You know, I mean,
that's an interesting angle.
Yeah. Well, you know, the wilder that you make these tales, the less likely that people are going to pay attention to them. I mean, this is something that has been used very effectively in dealing with UFOs. If you have just all kinds of crazy wild stories, you know, people are going to stop listening. They're just going to start tuning it out. And the same way goes, you know, with the Philadelphia experiment. You know, you start talking about some of the wilder aspects of the time travel, and I think possibly some of the aspects of what later would be known as the Montauk experiments, which were allegedly a direct series of experiments that were done based on the original Philadelphia experiments. I think that some of these are actually disinformation in an attempt to hide what actually happened by just making it just appear crazier and crazier.
All right, let's open up the telephone line and let's go to the line. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin. We got a bad, bad connection. You're going to have to speak very loud into your phone.
Okay, how's this, guys?
We can hear you, but it's very garbled. Go ahead.
Okay, Tim, you can hear me all right? I want to know, you know, this whole thing with the Philadelphia experiment, it was the ones that were doing this, they were messing around with electromagnetics, and I think they really shouldn't have been doing it. Do you think there may be a connection with this usage of electromagnetics? Do you think they may have perfected that kind of technology, the kind of, I guess you could say, jumping technology to jump from one area to another? And do you think that the quote-unquote powers that be may have been using that technology against us for all these years?
Well, I don't know if they would actually be using it against us, but if this was a technology that they could perfect or at least try to understand it better. I mean, you have to remember that the Philadelphia experiments took place in 1942, 1943. That's a long period of time since then. So I would think that if this was something that they could get a handle onto, then yes, I definitely think that this would be something that would have great military, especially capabilities. We hear a lot anymore about the Black Triangle UFOs, and some people report these crafts performing in such a way that sounds suspiciously like some of the early stories involving the Philadelphia experiment. So I could see very easily that you could take this technology, and it's like I said before, you know, from my own experience, the Air Force seemed to be interested in this type of science, at least as far back as the early 1980s, and this, you know, and probably a lot longer than that. So yes, I mean, I could see where this type of technology could be extremely important, but as for using it against us, that I don't think so. At least I hope not. I would hope that this would be a technology that would be used in defense of the country.
Well, we can hope.
Yes.
All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Ryan in Puget Sound.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
A very interesting show tonight.
Thank you.
Before I get to my question, I wanted to ask, Tim, do you have any books that we can get, or do you have any plans for any new books?
Oh, sure. Well, probably my best-known book is The Lost Journals of Nikola Tesla. I originally wrote that in the year 2000, and it has not been out of print since that time, which I don't know if you know, if you know the world of small publishing. That's a feat that a lot of authors would love to have. So that's probably our best known one. You know, I have also like time travel, how-to guide, teleportation from Star Trek to Tesla. My most recent book is the journey of Admiral Byrd in the Land Beyond the Poles. So that's those are just a couple of the books that I currently have out.
Oh, okay.
You can find them at Amazon.com and most all bookstores.
Oh, okay, thanks. These electrogravitic craft, these craft that seem to have anti-gravitic properties to them, like the ones that Bob Lazar talked about, and the ones that other people have talked about, do you think that, like some of these cases, where such as the Travis Walton case, where he experienced like a 3-day time loss, do you think that some of these machines, when you get inside them, that you're kind of stepping out of our timeline for, or do you think that there's something else happening? Because I know when Travis Walton was returned, he was surprised to find out that he had a full-grown beard, and to him it seemed like he was just gone for I think it was for a day or something, but he was actually gone for 3 days. And I'll just take the question off the air. If you think that some of these machines, when you get inside them, the way that they work.
Do they warp time once you get inside?
Yeah.
All right, what do you think about that? And by the way, thanks for the call. What do you think about that, Tim?
Well, not only do some of these UFOs warp time inside, but they also seem to have a field surrounding them that warp time for the people who are fortunate or unfortunate enough to come within close proximity of them. I would say if some UFOs are actual extraterrestrial or aircraft or spacecraft of some kind of unknown origin, more than likely, the type of propulsion that they use is a method of warping time and space. I can only see that as a possible way in order to travel the vast distances between the star systems or even galaxies. I mean, if we believe Einsteinian physics that you can't travel faster than light, you can come close to the speed of light, but you can't go past it, then the only other way to travel these distances is to fold time and space, or actually punch a hole in it, and travel outside of it, which would essentially mean that some of these UFOs could be time machines.
Well, I'll tell you something, and I've had this conversation with quite literally, some of the world's top physicists that have been on this show. They were polite and didn't really scorch me. But I don't believe that the speed of light is the maximum speed there is. You can always imagine adding a one to anything. And if I can imagine adding a one, someone can imagine how to do it. And I think that it is the fastest speed we have observed, but not the maximum speed available. We'll talk about that perhaps in just a moment, but let's go back to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hi. I was wondering if I could ask your guest. I seen on the internet an interview about the Montauk Project up in New York. Mm-hmm. Which was supposed to have things to do with time displacement, and I heard that someone from that project actually had to go back, went back to the time of that ship when they did that Philadelphia experiment. Had to go back to that time and smash those glass tubes and stuff they were using at that time to shut that portal down. Does he give any merit to that, or do you? And I'll listen offline. Thanks.
All right. What do you think?
Well, this is one of those stories that that actually was taken directly from the first Philadelphia Experiment movie. And that's exactly the plot scenario. You know, the two sailors found themselves in the future. I think it was for the movie. It was the future. I think it was 1984 when they appeared, and then they had to go back and reappear at the same time that the Eldridge was in the time stream and smashed the device. And seal up the time portal. So that story, I think, is one of the many stories that are currently circulating. That I don't believe that they're true. I think that they're just being tossed around, as I said earlier, as a form to muddy the water and distract from what really happened, which may be even stranger.
What do you suspect really happened?
Well, what I suspect really happened is that it's like I said before. This was an attempt to create radar invisibility, and it actually produced a physical invisibility and even created an early version of teleportation. I do actually believe that the Eldridge managed to leave this this time-space continuum, for want of a better term, and appear almost instantaneously at the Norfolk shipyards. It then was enveloped again in a bright blue field of energy, and then it reappeared in the Philadelphia shipyard. And I think that this was one of the first indications of how we could create aircraft, man-made UFOs that could travel using a technology that is currently unknown to the civilian world, but I think is being used secretly in black-budget aircraft. And a perfect example is the black triangle UFOs that we hear so much about. And I think that a lot of this technology goes back to the early experiments with the Philadelphia experiment, and even further back to the early experiments with Nikola Tesla back at the in the early or late 19th and early 20th century.
Earlier, I was talking about the speed of light, and you know, it wasn't that long ago in our history when the idea that light even had a speed was unknown. No one had even thought about light having a speed. And that's not that far back in our history. Now, I said, if you can imagine adding a one to it, someone can imagine how to do it. And one of the things that I have said to several physicists, and to one in particular on this show, is I don't buy the idea that there are laws of physics. There are no laws of physics. What we call laws of physics are just descriptions of our current understanding. Now, at one time, our current understanding was what Newton had written, and he called it the laws of movement or the laws of motion. And then this little guy named Einstein comes along, And he says, you know, that's not right. That doesn't work when you speed things up. And he came up with his general and special theory of relativity. And he was scoffed. He was laughed at. People argued and said it's not true. And now it's accepted as gospel. Well, he's not the last smart guy on the planet. And some other little guy is going to come along, scratch his head, and say, you know what? Einstein was close, but he wasn't quite right. And he's going to step right over the boundary of what we call a law of physics right now. He's going to step right over it, and it's going to have to do with time, space, and speed of light. And all of a sudden, we're going to find out that the speed of light is the fastest thing we have observed so far. But that's not everything there is to observe. And there are speeds beyond the speed of light. I can tell you right now of one speed that is faster than the speed of light, and that is quantum entanglement. And that is where you have one particle that is entangled with another one, and whatever you do to particle A, there is instantaneous, immediate response instantaneously with the other particle. That's faster than the speed of light. So I don't know that they can ever measure the speed of quantum entanglement. It's instantaneous, but that's faster than the speed of light. Now, if you had a propulsion system that was built on that principle of quantum entanglement, you would have instantaneous transport across the galaxies.
Well, I think there's already some hints at that, the new physics as you're referring to. There's been some recent developments in particle research where scientists have taken highly charged particles and have observed that not only do these particles seem to go faster than the speed of light, but they seem to actually, oh, what's a good way to put this? They actually seem to go faster than time itself, that they seem to appear before they were actually sent off.
Yeah, yeah. I've read about that. That's pretty interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Nobody really truly claims to understand how this happens. And, you know, naturally, you know, other scientists are saying, well, obviously that this is a mathematical mistake. You're not conducting your research right, blah, 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 blah. But I think that this has some important ramifications for how we view the like you said, that next guy who comes up with the new theories of physics, you know. And don't forget, it wasn't that long ago that scientists were saying that it was impossible for heavier than air aircraft to fly.
You're right. There are no laws of physics, but there are laws of radio, and one of them is we have a break taking over, so we'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back. My guest is Tim Swartz. We're talking about Tesla. We're talking about time. We've talked about time slips and time travel, and they're sort of related. And we are, at this point, talking about laws of physics. But any of that prompts a question or a comment in your mind, we'd love to hear from you. The telephone number is 480-553-7232. It will work anywhere in the world. If you've got a telephone, you can dial that number. Of course, the country code is 1-480-553-7232. If you need to call us on the toll-free line, feel free to do so, 888-223-4599. If you are outside of the USA and Canada and you would like to send us a flash message, you may do so. Go to my website, scroll down, you'll see the link that says flash message, and you can send me your comment or question. I will read it on the air, provided it is germane to the discussion, and we'll ask our guests to comment on it. Tim, the statement that I made, there are no laws of physics, I actually had a probably the most famous physicist in the world on this show, and I was a little bit nervous when I said it. And I said, there are no laws of physics. It's just descriptions of our current understanding. And his response was, absolutely, that is correct. Now, that being the case, everything you can imagine becomes possible. So let's talk about time travel itself. Do you think that some, look, first let me check on this. I have heard that when Tesla died, that the U.S. government, I don't know if it was the military, I don't know if it was the FBI or who, but someone from the government went in and confiscated all of his notes, and that those have been taken into the dark. Yeah, they are no longer available to the public. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. When Tesla died, they pulled a truck up in front of his apartment building and loaded up with every single bit of material that they could find in his apartment. And this was under the order of the, let's see, I think it was the Department of Foreign Affairs, which was unusual because Tesla was a naturalized United States citizen at that point. He wasn't born in the United States. He was born in what is now known as Croatia or Yugoslavia. Mm-hmm. But at the time of his death, he was a U.S. citizen. But the Office of Foreign Affairs, probably under orders of the FBI or even higher up than that, swooped in and took whatever bit of material that they could find. Not only from his apartment, he also had some storage facilities that had notes and paperwork and all of that. Disappeared into the black hole of the government. Now, years later, some of this material resurfaced, and it was given back to the government of Yugoslavia, and it can now be viewed at the Tesla Museum in Belgrade, Yugoslavia. Unfortunately, not all of the material that the United States government released was made available, because then the Soviet Union swooped in and took what they found to be interesting. So there's a lot of material that Tesla had that is completely gone. It's labeled top secrets, and we just don't know what happened to it. I do know that some of it actually made its way to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. Others, who knows what happened to it?
So it sounds like, and this is just my characterization of it, but it sounds like what happened is the U.S. government, U.S. military, combed through it, took out what they wanted, turned the rest of it over to Yugoslavia, which then fell into the hands of the Soviet Union. What our government kept is still classified, and nobody knows what's in it. None of us know what's in it. A great deal of what was turned over to Yugoslavia fell into the hands of the Soviet Union and was probably classified. They took what they wanted. And there are a few things not classified and of maybe not that great of importance that are on public display at the Tesla Museum.
That's correct.
I have seen the Tesla Museum. I have not been in it, but I have seen it. I have seen most of Beograd. And by the way, to our listeners in the former Yugoslavia, on behalf of Nikola Tesla, let me say dobro jutro, dobro došli. That means that on both sides of the pond, you have two superpowers in possession of notes made by probably the most brilliant inventor and physicist that was alive on this planet for the past 200 or 300 years. Nikola Tesla invented the 20th century and a great deal of the 21st century. Everywhere you go, you find electricity, and it is alternating current electricity. Well, Nikola Tesla invented that. All day today, people have been watching the Michael Jackson Memorial and the remote control that they use for their television. Was the basic principle of that was invented by Nikola Tesla. Some people have been traveling today and were clocked on radar going too fast and got a ticket. You can thank Nikola Tesla. He invented the first principles of radar. If you've been listening to radio today, you're listening to radio right now. Thank Nikola Tesla. He invented radio. No, Marconi did not. Marconi took Nikola Tesla's patents and built a transmitter and beat Nikola Tesla to the punch on transmitting a wireless signal across the ocean. But it was Nikola Tesla's invention, and that's been ruled on by the Supreme Court. So he invented almost everything that we have around us, all the gadgetry that we have around us. He invented what makes it possible. So you have two superpowers in possession of his notes. It would seem to me that they didn't sit still. It would seem to me that they put them to use and that we very likely have the ability to travel in time. What say you?
Well, we do know that the initial reason that the United States government was so interested in Tesla's paperwork was his Tesla's claim that he had invented a death ray.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew how to do it. He said that if he had the right amount of money, that that he could build it. And he made this offer first to the United States, who didn't express any interest while he was alive, and then he made the offer to other countries around the world. And this was probably the initial reason that the United States government was so eager to get a hold of Tesla's papers. But then, as the years went by, and more scientists were studying his works, they came to realize that this was a guy who had conceived and had actually done experiments in all kinds of things that weren't even dreamt about in Tesla's lifetime. I mean, another example would be what we would now refer to as anti-gravity or field propulsion. Most scientists you don't want to use the word anti-gravity. I mean, that's such a bad word.
Mm-hmm.
Anymore. So the word is field propulsion. And but you know basically it's anti-gravity, and this was something that that Tesla discovered way back, probably as far back as the late 19th century, and then taking the same principles with field propulsion, I think that they also started to get an idea that that time travel to at least to their understanding, you know, was possible. You have to realize that Tesla, it was so far ahead of the curve of science that that we still have not caught up yet with some of the ideas that he was thinking of and doing experiments on in his day. It may still be another 100, 200 years in the future before we're able to catch up to some of the stuff, at least for what we know of. Now, I'm a big believer that military science is probably at least 50 years ahead of civilian science. So, I mean, it could very well be that they already have a very good grasp of some of these more esoteric ideas that that we're just dreaming about right now in our discussions. And one of these could be a rudimentary form of time travel.
One of the things that I've heard a lot over the years that I've been doing this show is that HARP, this massive, powerful transmitter located in Alaska, the most powerful transmitter on the planet, it is said, is Tesla technology. I've heard that. I'm not saying that it is. I'm saying that I have heard that many times on this show. What do you think? Is that Tesla technology?
Oh, definitely. The gentleman, and his name escapes me at the moment.
Okay. We have time to think of his name because a break just took over. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on final approach, meaning we only have a few minutes left. If you have a question or a comment for our guest, the telephone number is 480-553-7232 or toll free at 888-223-4599. Or you can send me a flash message if you are outside the USA and outside of Canada. When we went away for break, you were just beginning to comment on HARP and whether it was Tesla technology. You said that it is. Tim, let me surrender the mic to you and let you complete your answer.
All right. Well, the person who came up with the original patents for HARP was a Dr. Bernard J. Eastland. Who was a Texas physicist, and in his original patents, it was Eastland's idea to build a device close to the oil fields of Alaska, burn the oil right there, and then transmit the energy that was produced by the burning of this oil through the atmosphere to receiver units anywhere in the globe. Dr. Eastland felt that this was a cheaper and more viable alternative than piping it, the hundreds of miles.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is an idea that was originally conceived by Tesla. This was Tesla's big dream to be able to transmit power either through the atmosphere or through the resonance capability of the planet itself, wirelessly, almost like a radio signal.
Mm-hmm.
And that anybody who had the proper antenna, either strung up in the air or jammed into the ground, could receive this energy and power their house for free. And Tesla was even went as far as to begin construction of a transmitting tower in Long Island, New York, in the early 1900s, and he told his financial backers that, in fact, that he was building what was going to be the first radio television transmitting facility for the entire planet. That he kind of misled them, because the people who were backing him with money had gotten rich off of Tesla's wired AC currents. And as soon as they found out what Tesla was actually planning on doing, they pulled the plug, and unfortunately that was the death knell for Tesla's great idea, and unfortunately for the rest of his career. So then Dr. Eastland, in his patents, he basically was using the same idea for the Harper ray.
And then it just sort of got changed around for some other applications, I guess.
That's correct, yes.
All right, we have a flash message from Greece from Eustini Zoumi. And pardon me if I have mispronounced your name. That's what it looks like to my English-speaking mind. I read Greek. I just don't speak it very well. The question is, does your guest know anything about electrogravitic communication? Moreover, could SETI be the cover-up for the development of this or a similar, more advanced and sophisticated communication system in space?
Hmm. Well, now that's, I have to admit, Kevin, now that's, that is a new one to me. Now, when I hear the words electrogravitic, that is a term that is used as a form of electric propulsion.
Uh-huh.
that Tesla and T. Townsend Brown was working on. Now, there was a gentleman who claimed that using a form of electrical radiation, a radio reception, claimed to have been receiving messages from Mars. And I talked about this in the Lost Journals of Nikola Tesla. So this may be what he is referring to.
And electromagnetism is basically the backbone of radio communication.
Mm-hmm.
And if gravity is a wave, electrogravitics would be modulating the gravitic wave, and if you can broadcast using the principle of modulating the magnetism, certainly you should be able to broadcast using the modulation of a gravitic wave. It makes sense to me.
Yeah, it makes sense, but I have to admit that that's something that that I haven't heard about, or at least if I have, I haven't heard it referred to using that term. So I'm gonna have to.
Well, if there are extraterrestrials that are coming to this planet from elsewhere in the galaxy or universe, they're not using radio to communicate, because they have to travel so fast. They're traveling faster than the speed of the radio wave, which is the speed of light. And they would be outrunning their communications. So SETI is never going to hear from these guys. Never.
Yeah. Tesla had a grand unified theory where he said that gravity was a form of electromagnetic energy. And if that was the case, then yes, I mean, I could see where this could be utilized as a communication technique. And it's like you said, I mean, you know, it's obvious from all the years that SETI has been searching the universe, looking for intelligent radio waves, that they haven't picked up anything else. They haven't picked up anything, at least as far as we know. So if there is intelligent life out there, they must be using some other type of technique that is beyond our conception at the moment.
Well, I think it's beginning to be in our conception. That quantum entanglement thing, if they found a way to use that for communication, then they can communicate instantaneously to anywhere in the universe. And that is demonstrably faster than the speed of light. So, you know, SETI is never, ever, ever going to pick up radio waves from or radio signals from any extraterrestrials that are traversing the universe. If there are such extraterrestrials and they are traversing the universe, they are not communicating using radio. It's impossible.
I agree with that. You know, if they were communicating in that method, we would have picked it up years ago.
I think so. Yeah. Now they may pick up. There may be some extraterrestrials living somewhere within our solar system. And that's pretty bizarre to some folks' minds, but, there are people that say they do exist and that they are living under the surface of Mars. There are some who say they are living under the surface of the moon. Yeah, they might be using radio. But you would think that if they are, we would have picked it up by now. I think even they, if they are there, are using something at the quantum level, and it isn't radio.
Well, Tesla claimed that that he received intelligent radio signals.
I hate to do it, but guess what? The music for the end of the show just took over. Man, I wasn't watching the clock, and it goes so fast. Tim, stay on the line with me for a moment. Folks, click his picture and visit the website. It's fascinating. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.